The next and last stop is
Atlantic Avenue, Barclays Center.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Boomer and Geo on the Fan. It's a lot of Nets podcast.
I mean, the only Net fans you know. The only what? The only Nets fans you know.
At least they've got some self-aware.
Man. I mean, come on, man. Or are these guys?
Welcome back to Only Net Fans You Know podcast. Special edition episode. I'm Peter. Charlie's out, but I'm going to have a guest joining me in a minute. Within a one-year span, the Nets have managed to trade three Hall of Fame players and essentially start this rebranding or rebuilding of the franchise as we know it. As Net fans, we've gone through a lot. Whether you're from New Jersey or you're from the early days in Brooklyn, you've seen lots of bad luck, bad trades, lottery ping pong balls not going in our favor. We've had heartbreaking losses. It's just unbelievable what this franchise has gone through. But the trade of Kevin Durant signals the loss of the franchise's best player, as well as Brooklyn's most iconic athlete since Jackie Robinson. Co-hosting today, I got Spenny from Fireside Nets. Spen is a lifelong Nets fan. Him and his brother host Fireside Nets, dropping episodes every week following the team. I think he's one of the better Nets Twitter accounts to follow. And I think you guys are going to enjoy our conversation trying to break down this Kevin Durant trade and really trying to figure out the direction of this franchise going forward. I know maybe probably I'll get over it in a little while, but I'm always going to be asking myself, what if Spencer Dinwiddie didn't get hurt? What if James Harden doesn't pull a power play to go to Philly? What if Harden stretches and doesn't get hurt against the Bucks? What if Joe Harris makes a shot to give us a 3-1 lead? What if Josiah opens up his wallet and says, you know what, for the betterment of this franchise, we'll take a risk on re-signing this guy for 3-4 years. What if the Nets get Pascal Siakam, making Kevin Durant happy, and we continue on this year? What if?
Gets it into Durant. Here is Durant moving on Tucker. He turns. He shoots.
Yes! The Nets have won it!
Nets win the series!
The biggest playoff win in Nets franchise history. They dust Milwaukee.
Atlanta, 113 to 105, the final. Durant finishes with 31 points. Harden with...
Nets are in the NBA Finals.
Will the parade be the Canyon of Heroes, no, or will the parade be in Brooklyn?
The parade would be down Flatbush Avenue.
No, it's going to be both.
Okay, we'll do both.
Fine. A New York championship is not going down the Canyon of Heroes.
And the Brooklyn Nets have done it! They are the NBA champions! Brooklyn, you have your title!
Finals MVP, Kevin Durant.
Welcome back to the Only Net Fans You Know podcast. I'm Peter. Special edition episode. My co-host Charlie is out. Guest hosting, one of the best Nets Twitter accounts, one of the biggest Nets fans, who runs Fireside Nets, Spenny from Fireside Nets. What's going on, brother?
Not too much. That was an awesome intro. I should hire you to be my hype man, because that was fucking great. Thank you for that intro. I'm suffering right now. I'm hurting. But the one thing I take solace in is knowing that I'm not alone. I got people like you, Peter. I got a ton of different people on Nets Twitter who are hurting as bad as us right now. And that's the only thing that's making this breakup, you know, somewhat not as awful as it could be.
Last night around 105, 106, I can't sleep. I know a lot of Nets fans couldn't sleep. I go into Nets Spaces. About 1 minute in, everyone starts yelling and screaming. Kevin Durant to Phoenix. We've lost three superstars in a year. Franchise is just, run into the ground. I don't know how to say it. Out of all my net, you know, failures and whatnot, worst moments in franchise history, this has to be up there. Possibly the biggest failure in NBA history, no?
Yeah, I would argue it maybe of all professional sports. Very rarely you get three players essentially in their primes who are top three of the top 10 players in the sport. Let's be real. At the time, Harden was a top 10 player. KD's always been a top five player, and Kyrie's up there. We rarely see those three types of player in any sport joined together. When it has happened, it usually results in success. I can't think of any examples off the top of my head, but we've never seen something this hyped up with this much potential. I mean, it wasn't a matter of, are they going to win a championship? The question was, how many championships are they going to win? And the fact that in 3.5 years, you know, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. They're now left with no all-stars on our roster, no players in the top 25, and we are now in the midst of a rebuild. So you said the biggest failure in the history of the NBA, like, easy. I think it's bigger than that. I think this is one of the most epic failures in the history of professional sports.
You know, there's a lot of blame going around. Do you blame KD? Do you blame Kyrie for requesting the trade? Look back to last summer, everything that happened. I just go back to this. Egos, bad luck, and just a bad mixture and bad vibes just pretty much sent this team into like a free fall. We knew this was an issue. We knew coming into this year, KD might leave. I don't think any Nets fan 3 weeks ago thought this is how it was going to play out. Second year in a row, we're, I don't know, one or two games away from the first seed. About a week ago, we hear, you know, Kyrie wants to stay in Brooklyn. His agent is, you know, talking to the Nets, hoping that he could stay. Then this. He knew KD might request a trade over the summer, he did, when he thought that Kyrie may not stay. So what do? You don't pay Kyrie. And I understand there's a lot of off-the-court stuff, but if your religion is winning, as Josiah says, you look past a lot of this stuff. He knew that KD was going to ask for a trade. Jam said, listen, KD, if you stay, this is from the summer, if you stay, you know, towards the deadline, if you want to go, we will send you away. We'll help you get to where you want to go. I just don't understand the mindset of this front office. Obviously, they were tired of Kyrie, tired of the drama, tired of the leaks, tired of all this shit. But this is just looks like a franchise with no direction. And I blame Josai for maybe being involved a little bit too much. And I blame Sean Marks, who I've held water for a lot.
Yeah, I think everyone in this situation is to blame, right? You know, when Sean Marks made the decision I guess it wasn't really his decision. When Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving made the decision to sign with the Brooklyn Nets, Sean Marks and Joe Tsai kind of made a deal with the devil. The deal was, whatever you guys need, whatever you guys want, we will basically oblige. Okay, you want to bring DeAndre Jordan here and have us, you know, bring him along for the ride? You need him to start? Okay, we'll do that. You guys don't like Kenny Atkinson? You're not a fan? You want a more, I guess, established personality? Fine, we'll bring in Steve Nash, who you guys played with a few years ago, and he'll be our coach. Okay, fine, we'll oblige to that. Hey, we're thinking about bringing in James Harden. For this, you know, we're going to trade Caris LeVert, Jared Allen. What do you guys think about that? Yeah, make the deal. Okay, great. That was the deal that Sean Marks made initially with these two players. And what do we have to show for it? You know, the second round exit against the Bucks the one season, and then the four-game sweep against Boston last season. So it got to a point where Sean Marks and Joe Tsai, they were tired of being AD and Kyrie's bitch boys. They were basically like, we're going to take back our franchise. Guess what, Kyrie? We're not going to give you the extension. What do you think of that? Kevin Durant's like, I hate that. Why don't you guys trade me? So it just is blame all around. I mean, Sean Marks and Joe Tsai, they're not blameless in this entire scenario. You don't have three guys request a trade in a year and a half, and the front office is totally innocent in that. They definitely are to blame. Kyrie Irving is to blame for, I'm not even going to go over the list, but everyone who's a fan of basketball, a fan of the Nets, they understand why a player with Kyrie's talent is not pulling in a Kevin Durant-like package. The package we got from the Mavs, decent, but if Kyrie Irving's head was glued onto his body straight, he would get a KD-like package. He would have that value. So he is to blame for all the bullshit that he put Nets fans through and the organization through his tenure. And by the way, if you're listening to some of the things he's saying since he's signed with the Mavericks or since he got traded, it's totally revisionist history bullshit how after year one he was thinking he had issues with the organization and he doesn't trust the people in the front office and all this stuff, even though him and his team wanted an extension like 2 weeks before the trade request. So he's totally full of shit. And the one thing I'll say about Kevin Durant is whenever he was available to play basketball, he did, and he did so at an elite level. So I'm not going to hold that against him. What I will say is he was not able to stay healthy in his tenure here. He had injury issues, and every single season he got hurt. And in that Bucks season, you know, he was able to come back after that was the year that that was the 1 year that he basically stayed healthy, right? The Bucks year?
I think he had little minor injuries, but he was healthy for the most part.
Outside of that one season, the other two seasons, he had the month absences. So including this season, he's still out. So I think to answer your initial question, those five people, the three guys, the three superstars and Sean Marks and Joe Tsai, they're all to blame. However you want to place that blame percentage-wise, that's a different story. But there's nobody here that's not at fault for this complete and utter disaster.
Do you have any hatred for KD?
What? Do I have hatred for him? I don't know. Do I respect him as a human being a little less than I did? And that started with the initial trade request. Yeah, I think that for him to want to come to Brooklyn and try to create a culture here and, you know, try to do all these things that he said he was going to do, it's great that he played his heart out while he was here, and I'll never forget the years he gave us. I think he's the best player to ever put on a Nets jersey. But do I think it's a little bit of a cop-out that he doesn't agree with the decisions that Sean Marks makes or, you know, like, Sean Marks will make decisions that Kevin Durant wants him to make, but re-signing Kyrie Irving to an extension, like, that's out of his control. That's more of a Joe Tsai thing, right? So I just think that, and I don't respect Kevin Durant's decision as much because of the way he made his decision. The Nets are not a bad basketball team. They're what, fourth, fifth place, or I guess, well, you know what place they're in, the fifth place?
Something like that, yeah.
Something middle of the pack. You know, Sean Marks made the trade for Spencer Dinwiddie and Dorian Finney-Smith with the idea that Kevin Durant wasn't going anywhere. So you look at that team, obviously if you're Marks, you probably would have had to get another big man if you were going to compete for a championship, maybe another ball handler. But I think for Kevin Durant to just be like, I don't want to play here anymore. I want to go to Phoenix and play with Devin Booker and Chris Paul and those guys, it was a little bit of a cop-out, especially because you're under contract. You know, the Nets gave you the big contract that you were owed, and they didn't give it to Kyrie, which means they believed in you a little bit more. I just think it's a huge middle finger to the fan base to not at least play out the season. If you played out the season and you lose in the playoffs and you want to get traded in the offseason, I'm all for that. But I hate the idea of leaving a team in the middle of the season. Like, it's not only disrespectful to the fans. How about the guys in the locker room, right? Like, how about the Nick Claxtons of the world, the Cam Thomases of the world, who are busting their ass to keep this team competitive while you're gone? And you're just like, to hell with all that. I don't like the direction of the franchise. Okay, you'd be playing for us for like two more months, and then it'd be done. You can go play for another franchise. So that part of it bothered me, and hatred, no, resentment, a little bit.
I can't think of another time or another sport that this has happened, three Hall of Fame players leaving one franchise in such a short amount of time. Like, it's just unbelievable. Now, if you're Joe Tsai, how do you feel about all of this? Is he fed up that he did this? Basically, I think we all could agree, if Kyrie signs an extension, this doesn't happen, right?
Yeah, you're probably right. I go back to my, you know, making a deal with the devil reference, though. Joe Tsai is on record. I don't know if he's on record, but Brian Windhorst is on record basically saying Joe Tsai would rather field a competitive team full of above-average, hardworking players than a prima donna team led by superstars. I don't remember what the exact quote was. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he said. And if that's true, and Joe Tsai was never going to give Kyrie Irving an extension, ever, right? If that's how he feels. What worries me, Peter, is if I'm a star in this league, I'm looking for a place to play in the next few seasons, I don't even consider Brooklyn based on what James Harden said, based on what Kyrie Irving's saying now, based on what Kevin Durant is probably going to say in the future. You're not going to hear good things about the Brooklyn Nets organization and Joe Tsai from those three guys. Maybe Kevin Durant, maybe, because we treated him like a god, but probably not. Harden and Kyrie are not going to be given this front office ringing endorsements anytime soon. So from that perspective, it worries me because it took us so long to make Brooklyn an attractive place players of that caliber. In 3.5 years, we've totally ruined whatever culture we had, whatever attractiveness that was there initially. It's gone. So that part really worries me about Joe Tsai. And if I could have my way, Joe Tsai would sell it to some other billionaire who's not as cheap and maybe makes better basketball decisions. But I don't know if that's something that's even going to happen in the near future. I don't think he wants to sell. I think he likes owning the Nets.
Yeah, there was a report coming, I think, from ESPN. I think it might have been Scoop. Scoop, heavy.com, like a Scoop B quote, saying how, like, Joe Tsai, like, you know, like saying, you know, how he owns the team, put his arm around the players, showing off that they're, you know, that they're close, even if they're not really. Like, it almost feels like the Nets are a toy. And I understand he was paying millions of dollars. I understand the Nets were losing money. But all of this just seems wild to me. Sean Marks stay on after the year? What do you think?
I think that he will, but he shouldn't. I think that he should be let go in the offseason. As I told my brother on Fireside Nets earlier today, I think Sean Marks is valuable in the fact that he's a good talent evaluator. I think we've seen him succeed in the draft with guys like Cam Thomas, guys like Nick Claxton. I think Kessler Edwards is eventually going to find a place in the NBA. I haven't hated what I've seen from David Duke Jr. and his limited action these last few seasons. So I think that Sean Marks has some decent qualities as a general manager. But he has not been able to put together a competitive roster that can stay on the court together and compete with the best teams in the league his entire tenure here. You can blame injuries for that, but even before KD and Kyrie got here, like those D'Angelo Russell, Dinwiddie-led teams, Caris LeVert, they were fun, but they didn't make any real noise. Like, they got shellacked by the Sixers that one year. So That's why I would not want Sean Marks back as my general manager, is because I haven't seen him get close to putting together a winning team. I'm not sure what the market is like for general managers outside of Brooklyn right now. I don't know if there's, you know, a Bob Myers in waiting for a job like this. But I definitely think that it's time for a change. I think when you've been allowed to basically be part of two different eras that have both ended pretty poorly, I don't think that you should be allowed to keep your job.
We know that he could rebuild, but I'm in agreement with you. I've held a lot of water for this guy. I thought he did a great job getting us here, but it just seemed like he couldn't get us over the top. I don't blame him for the Harden deal. Like, before, you know, before all of this, who would have known that, you know, trading the farm for Harden would have led to this, right? Another piece of blame that I do have to put on him: if Harden would have stayed, if you fired Steve Nash, or your three superstar players are complaining about Steve Nash, or just not even complaining, but you could tell that there's like a little issue there, why do you keep Nash there? There's even a whisper that Harden might have left, might have stayed if you fired Nash. Why? I don't know. It's just very confusing to me. I don't know if it's ego. You know, these guys know basketball, right? But if someone like me could see it, then obviously they had to know that there was a chance all of this could have happened. Now we're left with this roster. Like you said, good players, not great. How do you feel about the deal itself, for the KD deal?
I don't hate it. I like Mikal Bridges. I mean, he's 27 years old, but he's a really talented player. To call him a 3-and-D guy is a disservice to his game. He's got a great mid-range. He can obviously hit the three. Defensively, he's a stud. And he's just he's a high IQ basketball player. So I like him a lot. Cameron Johnson, I think he's been – his fit in Phoenix has been weird because he's great. I think he's a really – he's like, if Danny Green had more in his bag, I feel like you would get Cameron Johnson. And he also – he's athletic as hell. I just don't think he really worked in Phoenix because he kind of plays the same position as Mikal Bridges. So I like those two guys. Obviously, you get Crowder. He had to go in whatever deal they made. You move him for 5 second-round picks, so that's cool in itself. And what, you still got 4 first-round picks as well in the future. Obviously, those aren't lottery picks. They're towards the end of the draft. For Kevin Durant, you're never going to be in love with what you get back because it's not going to be close to Kevin Durant's value. No matter what, you'd have to literally trade DeAndre Ayton, Chris Paul, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson for Kevin Durant. And even then, I'd say, well, CP3 is kind of declining. But my point is, like, no matter what, we weren't going to be satisfied, because if Kevin Durant's not playing basketball for us, that's a bad thing. But for what it's worth, for a last-second deal, I understand why Marks did it. You had mentioned earlier they made this promise to KD before the season even started. So it was the Nets holding up their end of the bargain. I get it. What bothers me is, after he made that trade, what else did the Nets really do until the deadline hit at 3 p.m.? They didn't get a backup big man. They didn't fill out this roster, because now you have a million wings. You have maybe 2 point guards in Spencer Dinwiddie and Edmund Sumner. That's it. And you have one big man in Nick Claxton, because De'Ron Sharpe is still not there. He's not ready. So I'm bothered by the fact that Marks didn't go heavily in one direction or the other. He kind of just made the KD trade and then stayed pat, and the rest of the NBA went bonkers. Those last 3 hours of the trade deadline were like hot potato trade, Lakers make a trade, Nuggets. It was wild. Nuggets, Utah, everybody. But I don't understand, you know, after the KD thing, why Nash didn't go one way or the other. You have guys like Royce O'Neal, Dorian Finney-Smith, Cam Johnson. These are players that could help a perennial championship team. And you can get assets for that, and you chose not to. Okay, fine. But on the flip side, you have contracts like Joe Harris and Seth Curry that are expiring that you need to get rid of, that can't really help your team, but it can help another team. You can move those guys And you don't move any of those guys. And it just, it didn't make sense how he all of a sudden got so passive after that trade.
Do you see a direction this team is going in? I personally cannot tell. It looks like you said, you know, it would have been nice to unload Seth. Cam Johnson is going to be a free agent at the end of the year. You know, I don't know if you want to keep him. I don't know if they want to re-sign him. But this team looks directionless in my mind, and I think that's the biggest issue. It looks like we're going to try to compete, I guess.
Yeah, they are extremely directionless right now. The one thing that we don't know is, will Sean Marks grab anybody on the buyout market? Not that that's going to be a huge addition to the future of the team, but if you're able to acquire like a John Wall, a Will Barton, one of these guys on the buyout market to just flesh out your roster, I'd be interested to see that. Because the way they're currently constructed, it'll be fun to watch some of these guys play, but it's not a real basketball team. Like, they have one big man. Like, Dorian Finney-Smith is their next big man up. Like, that's not okay to have that because we lost Keith in the Kyrie trade. So they are directionless. It is scary. God, if I had to give Sean Marks a grade for this trade deadline, I'd give him like a C, C minus maybe. It'd be low. It'd be close to a D plus.
I think that's a very fair grade. I think I would have made it even lower because, like we said, we don't know the direction of this team. I'm going to give you a little pushback on the buyout market thing. Why would these guys want to come to us? They're going to want to go to winners, right?
Well, we're still a playoff team, number one. And we have roles that need to be filled. We don't really have a backup point guard right now. Like, I love Edmund Sumner. It's pretty much Edmund Sumner. You have Ben Simmons kind of playing minutes and running point, right? And by the way, we weren't able to trade him. Why? Because he has no value. So that sucks. There's an opportunity for anybody who's a big to come in and back up Claxton. That's an opportunity. Obviously, there's no opportunity for wings because we have a million of them. But if you're a point guard, or you're a guy who can run an offense, or you're a big who can rebound and defend, the Nets will give you a lot of minutes. But sad is, I think that we're going to see a lot of fan favorites minutes start to decrease. How much do you think Yuta Watanabe is going to play that Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges are Brooklyn Nets?
Zero. You're going to, you know, like, I don't know where he plays. We saw his numbers go down since KD's been hurt. Like, his numbers have gone down, I think, since KD was out, I think he's shooting like 30% from three. Now that teams are kind of focusing in on him, his numbers aren't going to be there anymore. And realistically, he's a free agent at the end of the year, I think, right? So if I know that, and I know he's probably not going to be part of the team's longer-term view, I need to make sure, if I'm paying Cam Johnson, that he's going to fit with this team. So, like you said, Yuta's minutes are going to be gone.
What about Peter? What about Ben Simmons? How much do you play Ben Simmons? Because you got guys like Spencer Dinwiddie and Edmund Sumner who can actually score and help you win ball games. How often are you going to throw Simmons in there to be a minus 100? Right? But you have to evaluate his talent because you have this contract and you have to see if he has trade value. There's a lot of things that, like, you got to think about for Jacques Vaughn. It's like, yeah, you got to try to win ball games, but at the same time, there's so many. Usually teams are, you have a few really like the elite leaders of the team. Then you have your role guys. Then you have your 12th, 13th men in and out of the G League. The problem with the Brooklyn Nets is they have 10 role guys now. It's a tough way to run a basketball team. You know, you think of Utah Jazz, right? People love the Utah Jazz. Great story. But that's what they have. Lauri Markkanen's better than a role player. Jordan Clarkson's a great sixth man. Walker Kessler's a project. Outside of those three guys, it's all role players. That's why they don't win a lot of basketball games.
You're right. I wish we could see what a crystal ball, like what's going to happen next. But really, this team could finish out of the playoffs, or they can continue to be in the top four if everything truly, quote unquote, clicks and they get lucky, right?
Wouldn't that be something if they finish in the top four after everything we've been through? If they get the four seed, you and I are celebrating with a steak dinner somewhere.
Let's go.
I mean, come on. If we get the four seed, I will buy $100 worth of lottery tickets, and I know I'm going to win. Because I just, like, that would be amazing, right? Man, I am excited to watch, like, the new look, the new faces on this team. Guys like Dorian Finney-Smith. We have four new players that are all pretty decent, pretty solid. In Mikal Bridges, Cameron Johnson, Spencer Dinwiddie, and Dorian Finney-Smith. So I'm excited to see those new guys and how they look. I'm excited to see how Jacques Vaughn utilizes his roster now that they're extremely deep. But am I optimistic that we're going to compete with the likes of the Celtics and the Bucks and the Sixers? We're out of that top tier. We're in the same tier as the Bulls, Raptors, Wizards, and the Hawks. That's the tier. And honestly, the Knicks. But I still think we beat the Knicks.
God, I hope so. What does the starting lineup look like? I know it's a lot, and you know, I wouldn't even know how to answer that, but what do you envision the starting lineup being, if you can? I know I'm throwing you into the fire a little bit with this one.
Oh, you're good. Obviously, you start Claxton at the five. He's my five. You start Dorian Finney-Smith at the four. You start Mikal Bridges at the three. So that's your front court. Bring Cam Johnson off the bench. He is coming off, coming back from injury. I think his first game was against us the other night, or if it wasn't against us, it was against someone recently. But he's coming back from injury, so bring him off the bench. And then our backcourt, I personally would go Dinwiddie and Curry would be my backcourt. And then your first two guys off the bench are Cam Thomas, who essentially plays most of the game. Cam Thomas and Royce O'Neal would be my first two guys off the bench. I think Joe Harris is now buried because he's just not even close to any of the guys I named defensively. I think Ben Simmons is someone who is going to get, he's going to get like gadget minutes as a backup point guard. Sumner's play will continue to be sporadically. And am I missing anyone? And then Yuta Watanabe and Patty Mills. Those two guys are going to be like, hey, when I need you, come play, but it's not going to be often. But my starting lineup would be Dinwiddie, Curry, Bridges, Dorian Finney-Smith, Nick Claxton. Having said that, I know Jacques Vaughn likes to start Joe Harris or Royce O'Neal over Seth Curry. I don't think Seth Curry started a lot of games this season. So I can see him going with Joe or Royce at the two. But me personally, I think you start Curry, see if he gets hot. If he doesn't get hot, throw in Cam Thomas, who can get his own bucket whenever.
I don't know about the Ben Simmons thing. I could see them starting him just if, man, if this team really wants to win, then yeah, he's going to come off the bench. But I feel like we might be seeing Ben Simmons get more minutes just because they have to see if something's there, right?
I guess they have to, but
have to.
At some point, like the more he plays, the lesser his trade value is. Like that's what scares me. He has not shown me anything. I don't know. He didn't look terrible when he was surrounded by Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Okay, fine. You and me can share the floor with those guys and not look terrible. That's not hard to do. The second that Kevin Durant got hurt and he was asked to step up and have a bigger role, didn't really do it. And then he got hurt. Then he had the weird injury where it looked like he got hit in the eye and you watch the replay, he wasn't touched and he's like, ah, my knee hurts. None of that made sense to me, but fine. Then he's out five games. He comes back the other night and he's getting booed by the home crowd. What a bad look. And look, whatever mentally he's had to go through in his career sucks. And it sucks that, you know, basketball, football, professional sports are just so millions and millions of eyes are on you, and you're going to have to deal with criticism, and you're going to have to deal with hate and bullshit. That part I feel bad for. But in terms of playing basketball, you watch some of the clips of Simmons just trying to get rid of the ball as quickly as he could, like it's a hot potato. That is someone who mentally doesn't have the confidence to play to his ability. Call it the yips, call it whatever you want. It's a scary thing, and sometimes guys can't come back from that. Markelle Fultz had it when he got into the league. He's gotten past it now. He has a decent role on Orlando. But there are people who think that if it doesn't work out in Brooklyn for Ben Simmons, he might be done in the NBA for good.
I could definitely see that for sure. I think they have to give him minutes. I don't think he's tradable at the moment. I think we might even have to put in first round picks for someone else to take him. If you're not going to win, why not try to give this guy some minutes? Do you feel like there's anything in there? Is there any chance in your mind that he could come back? I think there is, but then again, I'm a Nets fan, right? I'm so fucking biased. And we need him to be competitive.
I'm the type of person, like, most of the time things don't change. And if something's not happening and you want it to happen, odds are it's not going to happen. Eagles are a much better team on paper than the Chiefs, and I want the Chiefs to win. But I don't think the Chiefs are going to win because the Eagles are better on paper. So by that logic, whatever I want doesn't matter. I think that there is a 25% chance that Ben Simmons could return closer to what he was in Philadelphia than he is now. 25%, which means I think there is a 75% chance. This is about what we're going to see. Maybe he'll be slightly more aggressive, but you can even tell. Those games where he tries to take more shots and he tries to force the issue a little bit, it still looks so unnatural. His go-to shot is a turnaround hook shot that does not really look very smooth, right? I don't think he's taken a jump shot the entire season. When he was in Philadelphia, he was taking 10 to 15 foot jump shots. He was. It wasn't like, you know, that far, but he was getting into the jump shooting motion and pulling it. So from what I've seen this season, like, he's played enough. We've watched enough Ben Simmons tape to be like, right now, this guy stinks. I don't mean to be mean about it. He's not good at basketball. Is that dog still in him that he can take over games with his dribble, going to the rim, dunking, yamming it on people? Maybe. But he's had enough time to recover from his injury, to practice. And my other thing is, like, what is he doing? Practice. If he's going into games and shooting that uncomfortably and taking these bizarre-looking shots, like, what is he really practicing? I that just boggles my mind, because usually when you do something repetitive, you do it on the court too. I think it's a 25% chance that he picks it up, 75% chance that he's never going to be what we want him to be as a Brooklyn Net.
What does Sean Marks, if it's going to, or the GM for the Nets, if it's not Sean Marks, what does this person do with all these draft picks that we've just gotten? Do you think it'll be used to acquire a star maybe in the offseason? Or do you just say, fuck it, you know, we're nuking everything, we're starting from scratch?
I think the latter. I don't think that have the roster to attract a superstar. I don't know what superstar you would attract. The one guy that comes to mind for me, if you were going to go that route, would be Damian Lillard. Like, maybe you call up Portland in the offseason. You're like, hey, I have all these draft picks. I have a lot of solid players. You know, I want Dame. Clearly, you guys want to trade him. You're going in a different direction. That would be the only guy I'd probably do it for. But I think you're at that point where, whether it's Marks or somebody else, use the picks this draft. Draft as many guys as you can. See who pans out. Get as young as possible. Get rid of contracts like Patty Mills, Joe Harris, Seth Curry, guys who can help a playoff team, but they don't make sense on a rebuilding team. And go from there. And, you know, we're seeing it with so many teams, Peter. We're seeing it with the Magic. Banchero and Suggs and Cole Anthony and guys on that team. We're seeing it with Detroit. You know, Cade Cunningham, Sadiq Bey was a trade to the Nets, from the Nets to the Pistons. But the point being, we're seeing these young up-and-coming teams. The Rockets was who I was thinking. They got a few guys who are going to be good in this league. The OKC Thunder with all their young cats. I like watching those teams. I like watching those young kids develop. And Cam Thomas and Nick Claxton are two guys that are young. They've looked really good this season. If you get a few younger guys to put around them, I don't think you're that far off from being a competitive team in the East. So I would say, fuck it. Go into the draft with your picks. See who you can take. It's been a minute since the Nets, you know, had a lot of draft stock, a lot of draft capital that they can actually just take guys. Obviously, you know, the Harden trade fucked you a little bit with picks, but this KD trade, this Kyrie trade, you got a good amount back. So, you know, do what you can and see if some guys pan out. You've had success in the past. Why not do it again?
Final question. Where do we finish seeding-wise and playoff-wise if we make the playoffs?
I think we finish as the eighth seed. We're in the playoff game with the seventh seed. I think that we probably will lose that game. I think, and how does it work? If you lose that game, then you play the winner of the ninth and tenth, right?
Correct.
So I think we'd win that game. Give me a Spencer Dinwiddie heroic play-in performance. We beat, I don't know, the Pacers or the Knicks or one of those teams around. It would be great to beat the Knicks in a play-in with nobody. Like, I would absolutely go bonkers for that. But we get smoked by whoever the one seed is, which this Nets team will get destroyed by the Celtics. So, that's probably my prediction. It's eighth seed, play-in game, lose the first game, win the second game, get to play the one seed, lose that series 4-1.
I don't know where this team is going to go. Hopefully it's good. All the stands are gone. Kyrie stands, KD stands, they're gone. And what we have left of the rubble are fans that have been following the team since New Jersey, since early Brooklyn. And if you're listening, you're probably one of those people. Throw out your plugs out there, and then we'll be done.
Yeah, you can listen to me on Fireside Nets, brought to you by Empire Sports Media. I host that show with my brother Nick. We put out an episode once every single week, usually Monday nights, Tuesday nights. And yeah, that's really it. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube.
Follow us on Twitter at NetFansYouKnow. Check out the YouTube, youtube.com/@NetFansYouKnow. Have a great day. Have a great night. Thank you guys for coming through, checking us out. We'll see you next time. All right, everybody. We're out.
Still think like we look like a fucking clown show.
I'd rather be a clown show with KD.
I'd rather be a clown show with the championship. I agree.